Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, hot on the heels of his most successful solo tour ever, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Steve Hackett announced his Steve Hackett Genesis Revisited Foxtrot at 50 and Hackett Highlights Tour coming to Chicago on Thursday, November 2nd at the Copernicus Center. The tour marks the 50th anniversary of the legendary Genesis album Foxtrot, which in 1972 was pivotal in establishing the band as a major force in British rock. Guitarist Steve Hackett joined Genesis in 1971 along with Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel, Mike Rutherford, among others. And to talk about the tour, Genesis, and his rock and roll journey, Steve Hackett. Hey there, Steve.
Hi there. How you doing?
Oh, I'm great. I'm thrilled to talk to you as well. What an amazing long journey for you.
Yeah, I mean, it started way before Genesis, to be honest. You know, I was involved with music making ever since I was 2 years old. I was dead serious about it. So I was born back in 1950, halfway through the last century, and most of the Genesis guys were about my age, so I think we came up through similar post-war conditions, and I think it was a very lucky time. The 1960s was a hugely creative time for musicians, with the end of conscription, followed by suddenly the arrival of bands such as the Beatles and the Stones and many others. And of course, up to then, we'd been listening almost exclusively to American acts. And then suddenly, we had some British ones that were due to become internationally legendary. It was a great time. And I was after, as my attentions moved from harmonica, 10 years of harmonica, and then I moved on to guitar, because my dad was able to play a number of instruments, he was able to, you know, demonstrate what each of them can do. Even though he wasn't a professional, he was a very gifted amateur, and so that was an early musical influence. I think most bands from mid-60s onwards were pretty much blues-based within the UK. Most bands that were player-based. And then there was a kind of transition to this fusion of baroque and blues that became progressive music. You could be listening to Segovia 1 minute and Jimi Hendrix the next, and then suddenly it didn't have to be a guilty pleasure listening to classical stuff. There were bands that were starting to incorporate classical changes and syncopation. So you had the best of both worlds, and a mixture of the instinctive and the schooled players, which is basically what Genesis was.
Well, you mentioned Jimi Hendrix, but I know a lot of your influences was your own father. You know, you played the harmonica and other instruments, as you mentioned, but also Jethro Tull, King Crimson, all were big influences on you, but big influences on Genesis and all the guys there, too.
Yes, I think that, and also the work of Jimmy Webb, you know, who I think we considered to be the greatest American writer of songs. So Genesis was really a songwriters collective, and I was after joining a team of writers, which is what Genesis was. So I think they were the best writers around at the time. So I was very, very lucky to join them and try and put some fire into what they did, so I could use some of that blues influence, but you take it off into directions that perhaps had not just spirit but also form as well, and that's where writing comes in. So luckily, of course, we had our older brothers in music, the Beatles. John Lennon, funnily enough, described Genesis as true sons of the Beatles, so maybe you should say our forefathers in that way. So I'm very proud of everything that Genesis did, but also beyond that, you know, before that and beyond that was where I was headed. So these days I've tended to do a show that's a mixture of solo stuff, and then in the second half of the show we give them pure Genesis, and that's what's it's been creating waves doing that, you know, with Genesis officially hanging up their spurs and saying there's no more. I just think, well, actually, it all depends, you know, what you do with that material. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I performed it with orchestra, sometimes re-recorded with orchestra. There have been lots of people involved in this, lots of people from like-minded bands, and you mentioned a few of them. So I've worked extensively with guys from Yes and King Crimson, most notably. So you get that sort of mixture of Genesis and Yes that, you know, we've had that with... I worked with Steve Howe. We had a band called GTR mm-hmm. in the mid-1980s. We had a hit from that, which was When the Heart Rolls the Mind, which took off big time over here. And so for a couple of years, he and I were working together. And then many years later, I was working with Chris Squire. We did an album together called Squack It. So again, there was that sort of fusion of the two bands and different writing styles. But, you know, the similarities outweighed the differences between that band and ours. Perhaps Genesis was more concerned with songwriting form. I suspect that was the main difference, whereas Yes tended to stress or favor the playing. Mm-hmm. But then as a guitarist, of course, you know, that suited me fine. So
you grew up near London's King's Road in the 1960s, which was a perfect place for a young musician. And the music scene was really evolving over those next 10 years when Peter Gabriel brought you into Genesis. But you really helped, you know, your style really helped share the sound of Genesis and help evolve it over time, didn't it?
Well, I like to think that, you know, I think I was brought in as a kind of, if I said a hitman, that wouldn't really be it. I think, you know, to fire off a few salvos over what was basically, hugely interesting work that they were doing, but they were almost folk rock at the point when I first saw them, and I thought, well, perhaps I could lend a harder edge. And Phil Collins had just joined 3 months before me, and I think he was of a similar mind. So I think once we were all working together as a team, we took the summer off and we did an album called Nursery Crime. So we weren't doing any shows for a while. And luckily, our record company that were managing us at the time, Charisma, had sufficient vision to say, yeah, these guys need to develop their skills as a unit. Mm-hmm. And I'm very grateful to Tony Stratton Smith, who was the visionary owner of Charisma Records. He was an extraordinary patron of the arts, really. Very, very clever guy. He invested in films. He invested in musicians, a gregarious character. I think that he was fundamental to the band's development and in mine.
But you made some really significant contributions to the sound, as we talked about, like six classic Genesis albums. You mentioned A Nursery Crime through 1976's Wind and Wuthering, and one EP, 1977's Spot the Pigeon. But with, like many bands, there was competition in performing and writing. And it's not unusual in a band to do that, but that also isn't a lot of fun when that competition becomes the focus, right?
Well, yes, I think that Genesis, at its most cooperative, was absolutely mighty. Of course, the competitive edge sometimes meant that you had friction within the band. So Peter Gabriel, who was our lead singer, left over not so much musical differences. I think it was always possible to work together, but I think that he felt that he needed to work outside the band as well as have a career within the band. And I had the same thing. I'd done one album outside the auspices of the band, and I think it surprised everybody that it was a big hit. And it makes things more difficult when you go back to being a member of the crew after you've been captain of your own ship. So no musical differences, really, just in terms of policy. So I was given an ultimatum. Either I didn't do any work outside the band and stayed with it, or I was going to have to go solo, which is what I decided to do. I thought, basically, my allegiance has to be to music itself, even though Genesis is probably the greatest band around. If my efforts are going to be curtailed to that degree, I couldn't limit myself. So I was straight away to work with a number of phenomenally talented American performers, Richie Havens, Randy Crawford, whose career took off hugely in the UK after I worked with her, Steve Walsh of Kansas, who just had a huge hit with Carry On My Wayward Son. So Kansas worked with Phil Earhart, who was really the band leader, and Steve Walsh, and that was hugely interesting, working with this kind of Anglo-American setup, both American guys and English working together. And so my second album was called Please Don't Touch, and I know that the guys who worked on that, Chester Thompson, had worked with Genesis and did for many years, and introduced me to Tom Fowler of the Fowler Brothers. It was hugely interesting because Chester had worked with Frank Zappa, he'd worked with Weather Report, lots of groundbreaking stuff. So I loved working with guys who were not just gifted, but also had this kind of pan-genre approach. Lots of styles, lots of different kinds of music, which is my calling card, really. I've worked in lots of different styles of music, but I think, you know, the calling card and perhaps the virtue of progressive stuff is that so many styles are part of progressive. So one minute you could do something that was classically inspired, the next you could do something that was jazzy, you could do something that's bluesy, pop, rock, something very, very long like Supper's Ready, or something equally short like I Know What I Like, which was the first hit that Genesis had. So we weren't just a case of a one-horse trick.
Well, and plus I was looking at like just various rankings, reviews of all Genesis albums, and the majority of the top five feature you. It was the years that you were there, and that's got to be a feel-good. You know, because, I mean, this band's been around for a very, very, very long time. And to say that the ultimate Genesis albums, and, you know, were you know, headlined on the guitar by Steve Hackett, I mean, it's an amazing thing.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think that instrumental work is as important as what's going on vocally. Many might disagree with me, but, you know, I think that bands that have had longevity usually feature both. Yes, Genesis benefited from that. I would say, you know, the golden era of Genesis, for me, it stretches really over. There's two albums that come into focus immediately. There's Foxtrot from 1972, mm-hmm. and then its successor, which is Selling England by the Pound, 1973, which is where you get the comment from John Lennon. Hmm. I think somehow, you know, those two albums define the breadth of Genesis. I mean, Foxtrot has songs on it that are inspired by everything from early music to science fiction, social comment, humorous stuff, grotesques. It's a whole kind of circus of sound, and I love that, and I still use that influence today. I pushed it in that direction when I was involved, and I still love to do it now. The idea of songs are the stories and narratives, and again, I think, you know, that finds its echo or its influence with, you know, the work of Jimmy Webb creating those wonderful sort of films for the ear, the Western as embraced in song, such as Galveston and MacArthur Park, mm-hmm. Somehow Wichita Lineman, songs that are not just romance, but romance of place as much as romance of person. So it seems to me that there's a kind of evolution in song that he personified. And I think that I know he was very influenced by English music and the work of Vaughan Williams and composers such as that, because he'd grown up playing organ in church with his father as a preacher. I think, you know, that again, with Genesis, you have that thing with it's almost this kind of contradiction of syncopated church music, if there was such a thing. Those first inversion chords, and then you stick in some tricky dicky time stuff with it, and it becomes something else.
We're talking to Steve Hackett. He's in concert coming to Chicago on Thursday, November 2nd at the Copernicus Center. And it's Genesis Revisited, Foxtrot at 50, and Hackett Highlights. And there's more with Steve next here on 720 WGN. State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Steve Hackett coming to the Copernicus Center on Thursday, November 2nd. You know, you have two remastered versions of your solo albums, To Watch the Storms and 2006 Wild Orchids, being released December 8th on two LP black and colored vinyl records with signed copies, too. I think it's really cool that you're throwing this stuff out on vinyl again.
Yes, I think, you know, one tries to address all formats. That's the thing with me. I think, you know, there are vinyl enthusiasts, vinyl fetishists even.
Yeah.
And it, you know, not everybody wants to listen on headphones.
Right.
I mean, I personally love CD. I know that it's becoming less and less popular, and I'm frustrated that I got a new car and it doesn't have a CD player in it.
Right.
So I'm kind of old school in that way, but then I love full bandwidth, and I don't want to hear it reduced. And I do like the idea of playing things to people. Otherwise, you know, you've got this thing that's exclusively out there. It's the joggers who are listening on iPads, and everyone's involved in their own private world, their own phones, their own earbuds, and all the rest. But, you know, this kind of communal listening, it seems as if it's heading towards, that's only going to happen when people go to shows, it seems to me.
You know, the late Eddie Van Halen credited you for his tapping technique. Explain what two-hand tapping is all about, Steve.
You can either pick a note with a plectrum, and or you can hammer on and off. So you're pulling on and off. You're hammering on, say, with the left hand and pulling off, and you're doing a trill. Well, you can incorporate the right hand as well. So you can incorporate as many fingers as you want with that. It just means it's a way of being able to play very, very fast and to be able to do huge jumps without having to necessarily travel across the strings. It's difficult to describe, really, but it's a way of turning the fretboard of the guitar into something akin to the keyboard that might accompany the piano, for instance, where you can do long stretches. And so It enables you to be very speedy and jumpy, and it's a technique that's now become, you know, part and parcel of every heavy metal player, and shredder will be aware of this technique and will use it. So it's my equivalent of Dylan's method of singing, shall we say, where you're singing somewhere near the note, but you're below it and above it, and You're sailing over it. So, but if I become known for nothing else, it'll probably be the tapping technique.
Well, let me ask you this: like when you hear a guitarist say that you were their influence and you taught them, what does that mean to you?
It means a lot to me. You know, sometimes people will hear stuff that I do and they'll say, "Oh, maestro!" But I'm always learning, so I'm forever the pupil. I'm happy to learn from others. I think that every time I saw somebody else doing something on guitar that I couldn't do, I thought, yeah, this is interesting. Every every other guitarist out there is my teacher. So I'm observing the whole time, and I'm watching, and I'm listening. So I've drawn a lot from Andres Segovia, but a lot from other electric players, and I guess that's where the broad-based approach pays off, because you don't have to be one thing or the other. I think it's possible to love both ends of the guitar, the acoustic guitar, the electric, especially nylon. I love that, because that's kind of the guitar's equivalent of the piano. You've got wide dynamics. You've got lots of different tones you can use from that. And then there's electric, of course. You know, one power chord on an electric, two notes, one power chord, and it's an extraordinary thing.
Steve Hackett, Genesis Revisited, Foxtrot at 50, and Hackett Highlights Tour coming to Chicago on Thursday, November 2nd at the Copernicus Center in Chicago. Go to copernicuscenter.org for tickets. What a great pleasure speaking with you, Steve, and I look forward to seeing you in Chicago, pal.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely talking to David. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.